into the theater and the usher nods me in. They know me here. I descend down the staircase behind the movie screen that only select people know about. The door at the bottom opens and I walk in. The sound of movie spoilers fill the air. The barkeep has my drink ready and motions me to the back. The rest of the crew are here already. This is my type of place, and these are my type of people. Join me as we discuss the inner secrets of cinema. Have a seat in the spoiler room.
Hello, my friends. Yes, it is the spoiler room once again. And this month, I decided, you know what, be interesting. Trying to find movies that take place on other planets that still involve sword and sorcery. And I happened to find a few, just a few, to talk about. And we're going to talk about the first one tonight. And yes, this one did get the Riff Tracks treatment recently. And it is from 1983, and it is called Krull. And to talk about Krull this evening, I have a great group of crew members to join me. First off, it is none other than the diva of the spoiler room. Hello, Dawn. How are you?
Just ducky, Mark.
Just ducky. You going to turn into a duck?
Maybe quack.
Or quack. Or a goose. It was a goose. So
it's a goose.
It was a goose. Yes, it was. And next to Dawn, returning once again to the spoiler room, is the BFD himself, Mr. Glenn Bittner. Hello, Glenn.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going good. Looking forward to talking to some Krull.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, let's see. Dawn, did you want to give the synopsis, or would you like to defer to Glenn?
Glenn is always entertaining.
So, Glenn, go ahead. Give us the synopsis of Krull.
All right. Krull. So, you got this pretty boy who's apparently a prince. Which would make sense, because princes are pretty boys, right?
Usually.
Yeah. And, you know, he's just chilling, you know, like, hey, cool, I'm a prince. Then these, alien dudes show up, and they got, like, these swords that are lasers that are burst, so they, like, shoot lasers, and they turn around, they're, like, swords, and they got snakes in their heads. They, like, kill everybody off, steal his little bride-to-be, and he assembles this ragtag band of people with... some actually interesting actors in it as well, like Liam Neeson. He goes off to on this quest to defeat this big bad evil guy who goes from world to world and destroys it with his slayers. Slayers from the swamp! Then he goes out and he finds the knowledge he seeks, and then... defeats everything with love. Fuck me on that part.
See, I knew he'd do a fantastic job.
I was waiting for it.
And he had the glaive, which was pretty cool.
The glaive, yeah. Yes. The glaive.
One of two weapons that everyone in the 80s who played D&D wanted.
The other one was the sword and sorcerer.
Of course. Three-bladed sword that shoots blades.
Yeah.
Of course.
And the glaive, if you had both of those, you were unstoppable.
Pretty much.
I'm sure there's many a handwritten note up there from a DM with scrawled notes going, how the fuck do I come up with the stats for the glaive? What the hell? Never mind, there is actually a weapon called the glaive that's only a single-bladed like staff weapon, I think.
It's a pole arm.
So, but yes, Krull, and the name of Krull comes from none other than the planet in which all these exciting events take. So, Don, why don't you go first? Do you remember when you first saw Krull, and what were your initial impressions with it?
So, I actually remember when I first saw Krull. It was one of those, it was on TV, so flipping through the channels, and it was partway into the movie already when I started watching it, and I remember this very specifically because I missed the whole beginning part where it showed the spaceship landing and talked about how the Beast was from, you know, another planet. So when the very first time I watched this, I missed that whole introduction part, and I believed this was just another D&D fantasy sword and sorcery movie. I had no idea it was sci-fi. So, well, behold my surprise when I sought this movie out later and watched it from the beginning and go, whoa, that puts a whole new twist on this thing. Yeah. So I remember that very specifically.
But you thought it was a decent sword sorcery movie without the sci-fi element.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it. Glenn, how about you when you first saw Krull?
I saw this in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it. I was what, 12 when this came out? So yeah, it was, I was huge into D&D and this was perfect. But even at 12, I thought the ending was stupid.
Yeah.
But that didn't prevent me from watching it like 100 times when it was on HBO and then taking it, watching it more times.
I'm the same way. I saw it in the theater, though. I was a little younger. I was 8 because, you know, my parents took us to, well, I went to see Return of the Jedi just like 3 months beforehand. So you have this film coming out now, you know, and it was epic sword sorcery and sci-fi and oh my God. And yeah, I watched it many times when it came to cable as well. And yeah, I enjoyed it. You know, when I was younger, I didn't quite catch the themes, and it's been a while since I came back around to revisit it and watching it now. Yeah. The end, which we'll probably jump around, folks, the ending of Love Conquers All is like, wow, really? That's the angle you wanted to take, really?
Although, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, so we have here as our main prince, the pretty boy, who apparently he did work out quite a bit for Ken Marshall. It's the only film he ever headlined. He was like top billing, playing Colwyn. And yeah, he's pretty much your standard run-of-the-mill prince, isn't he, Glenn?
Pretty much, yeah.
There's nothing really new to that. This type of character that he adds to it at all. The bumbling, learning guy, almost kind of Luke-ish in a way. Did you get the feel maybe he was just a little bit like Luke?
He's more, he's not really a whiner. He's more ego.
Oh.
I think he's got a very, like, you know, he's got that, definitely that prince ego.
Yeah.
So.
I could do everything. And so then when they get their asses handed to him the first time in that scene where he's about to marry Lyssa and then the Slayers show up, which... This is one of the movies where the bad guys actually have the cooler name. Slayers. Yeah, when he gets his butt kicked, he's about ready to throw in the towel. And then you get his not Obi-Wan, Ynir, played by Freddie Jones, who says, yeah, get up off your ass. You're a king now.
Oh, yeah. Johnny Eyebrows from Doom.
Yeah, Johnny Eyebrows from Doom.
Yep.
Who... We had another Dune alum in here in, was it Francesca Annis?
Yep.
Who was also in Dune. So, yeah, that's an interesting little tie-in for those two. But, Don, what did you think of Colwyn?
I remember I had thoughts when I watched it last night, and they're escaping me at the moment. Mm. Yeah, you're right. Very stereotypical... Yeah. I remember, very swashbuckling, very yes. Errol Flynn. What I was thinking last night. It took me a second to get there. But yes, very swashbuckling, very Errol Flynn, very, like Glenn said, arrogant, and yet also incredibly stupid.
He is not the brightest bulb in the tree, no.
No, definitely not. Hey! you're going to climb up this huge mountain by yourself and stick your hand in the stream of lava to pull out this weapon. And, well, if you die, so what?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Because after he meets Ynir, his, as I call him, his Obi-Wan, because literally, folks, some of the dialogue in here, I'm like sitting there going, wow, okay. Mm-hmm. This isn't trying to pull from Star Wars at all. Which I know Star Wars also borrowed from others, but still, yeah, he crawls up that whole rock face and then he comes into the cave of lava to get the infamous glaive, which he thought was only legend, but of course the weapon isn't. And yeah, oh, look, it must be in that river of lava. Let me stick my hand in it.
Yeah.
But was it really lava? Because his hand didn't really burn. So was it just like a imitation lava, like a leap of faith type of thing? What do you think about that, Don? Maybe that was a leap of faith thing, that it wasn't actually lava in that part of, you know, everything else was lava, but maybe that one section where the glaive wasn't lava? Or do you think it was and it's just, yeah, he's just a tough guy?
Or maybe it's like King Arthur and the sword and the stone, and only the right person could retrieve it.
Well, they did say that only a person, the person of legend or whatever, could grab it, or they said something along that lines, like only, you know, the person who truly deserved it could grab it. So maybe that's why his arm didn't burn. Glenn, what about you?
He was protected by his destiny.
He's what?
His destiny protected him. He was destined to grab it, so the lava couldn't burn him.
Ah. So he rolled a natural 20, in other words.
He rolled a natural 20.
He made his con save.
This really does play out like a D&D module, doesn't it?
In a lot of ways, yeah.
It's like, oh, okay, acquire weapon. Now we need to...
Bad thing happens, get weapon, find a crew. Beat the bad guy.
Yes.
Save the princess.
The crew. A very interesting crew made up of thieves and other prisoners and such. With a young, who I forgot was in it, Liam Neeson.
Mm-hmm.
What'd you think of that, Don, with, you know, Liam Neeson and this other merry band of misfits that, of course, band with the king?
Well, you know, you could tell that he had talent even at that point.
Mm-hmm.
It took me, I did a double take at Robbie Coltrane, though.
Oh, God, yeah, I know, right?
I'm like, whoa, you need to have a beard on there, buddy.
Yeah, almost didn't recognize him, but you know, the merry band of crew, it was funny because when we get the king, the prince now turned king, is on his mission to save his future bride, who they never got a chance to actually, you know, exchange fire, which I don't get. I thought they played it off almost at first like he knew the one guy he talked about when they said, oh, we have 100 men. And he smiled for a minute and he was like, oh, that's not enough. And I'm like, oh, so this is going to be a buddy thing, but they aren't. It was just really weird the way that played out, you know, with these thieves. I thought for sure they were going to play it like he knew these guys for some reason. But he doesn't, but they jump on the bandwagon very quickly. Glenn, did you feel like it was a little too quick for these thieves to band with our king?
Possibly, but it didn't really bother me all that much.
Yeah, because you knew it was going to happen?
Well, yeah.
So, yeah, we've got these guys. Oh, I did forget, though. We have to mention our wizard of the group.
Urgo the Magnificent.
Short of stature.
Was it?
Wide of vision.
Yes. No, narrow in purpose, wide of it. Yeah, was it tall in?
Tall in stature.
He was, yeah, I forgot his phrase, but Yes, our wizard. Glenn, what did you think of our wizard?
Well, I thought he was the teacher from Willy Wonka. I like the character of Ergo, that kind of reluctant hero.
Mm-hmm.
He was a fun character.
He wasn't too bumbling for you?
I mean, it's the bumbling wizard is fun, you know?
Yeah.
It was short in stature, tall in power, narrow of purpose, and wide of vision.
Yes.
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 And gooseberry pie. Yes.
Yeah.
No, I liked his character. He was comic relief, but he wasn't, I don't think he was over the top annoying comic relief.
Yeah, I agree. He was just on the edge of ridiculousness, but not too much, you know.
Yeah. And there was good chemistry between him and the Cyclops.
Oh God, yeah, the Cyclops, played by Bernard Breslau, who actually wore lifts so they could make him a few inches taller because he wasn't tall enough already.
Yeah.
How'd you feel about Ergo, Dawn? Did you like David Batley's Ergo?
I did. I really liked the balance of selfishness and selflessness that he had. You know, the whole one puppy. Why would you only want one puppy? Why not have 100 puppies? Or when he asked the kid for sweets and he took the bigger half.
Yeah.
It's like, well, obviously I get the bigger half. I'm bigger. So, and it's just, and then he turns around and he does incredibly selfless things throughout the movie. But yeah, I thought he played that very well. In addition to that, really walking the line of being bumbling, but not,
yeah,
you know, over the top.
He wasn't Orko.
Yeah.
Correct.
He was almost Orko, but he wasn't quite over the line Orko. And yeah, we need to talk about the Cyclops character because I love, when I was a kid, I loved the Cyclops character. I thought it was an interesting story with him, the backstory they gave him, where he is actually from another planet, wasn't it? And then he came there and his people had made a deal with the Beast to where they gave up an eye for vision, but the Beast cheated them and had it so they could only see their future of their death.
Yep.
Like, this is actually a really cool backstory. What'd you think about the backstory with the Cyclops and this character, Don?
I really liked it. There were a lot of things about this world that was really well thought out. Mm-hmm. They put a lot of thought and effort into the entire world, into the characters, into the concept. There were a lot of things that, however, weren't entirely well thought out, like the, you know, audience reception and box office and whether or not it would actually be a success. Although, to be completely fair, when you compare this to a movie like Star Wars, there's not a whole lot of difference. One of them just happened to catch on fire with the imagination of the audience, and then there was this.
Yeah. there was this, which, had Star Wars maybe not come out, maybe it would have been received a little bit differently, even though there's a lot of similarities in the stories, or at least those elements. You're right on that. But the world that they built, yeah, I love it as well. Glenn, how about you with the world that they built and the Cyclops story?
I liked it a lot. I mean, as far as world building goes, I think they built a pretty interesting world. And I love it's so like classical myth. The idea is that, you know, we're going to strike this bargain. We're going to be able to see the future and then we're cheated. Oh, that's such a classic like type of thing you would get out of like some, you know, trickster god or something, mm-hmm. doing it to somebody. And, you know, these people who thought they were getting, you know, they were getting this great thing, and actually they were getting cursed.
Yeah. And but they end up to being badass warriors, because the Cyclops, I think, kills the most slayers.
Well, I mean, and that's one thing too. It's like that's the one thing, interesting thing, is the if you know when your death is, it's like, so you can do some crazy ass shit, because like, well, I know this isn't how I die.
Yep.
I hadn't thought about it like that, but yeah, you're right. You could pretty much do anything, because yeah, he's like, let me look at my watch. Nope, not yet. I can do this.
I can run through this swamp of quicksand and all this other stuff, because I know I'm not going to die in the quicksand.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Ah, the quicksand. Yes, folks, we have the dark fortress where the beast lives, where he has taken our Alyssa, and it moves, which is another concept I loved, was the fact that the dark fortress is never at the exact same spot. Every day it moves different spots in the world.
Yeah.
I thought, I'm like, you're right. The world they build is, I'm like, that's really cool. I mean, that's kind of an interesting concept. And so they seek out first the Emerald Wizard, who is supposed to tell them where they can find the Dark Fortress at. But he fails, so he goes along with them to the Emerald Tower, which I don't think we ever got to see the actual Emerald Tower.
No.
No, because this guy gets killed while they're fighting the Slayers in the swamp, which, you know, it had me wondering where Artex was, because it looked like the swamp from Neverending Story in some spots. But, yeah, and so then they have to go and...
That's Landis, Mark.
Hmm?
Saying all swamp looks the same, that's Landist.
It's Landist. I'm a Landist. I know. I'm sorry. No, you're right.
No, I actually had to say the same thoughts with that too.
Yeah. it just, considering the era when it came out, they're just so close together. You start relating these things. It's like, oh, this has a swamp too, and quicksand, and looks a lot similar. Oh yeah.
And now I'm picturing Cyclops and the rock drunk dude sitting around having a conversation.
Oh man.
They look like big, strong hands. Why, yes, they do. But yeah, I dug the Cyclops character and the whole world that they build here. Emerald Wizards, and you got the Widow of the Web, which gives us a chance to see Freddie Jones shine along with Francesca Annis. You know, Don, what'd you think about this sequence where we have Ynir going, well, Emerald Wizard's dead. He's failed, because so we got to go to the Widow. And this whole little section where, where the Widow, he knows the Widow, they have a past. It gets a little dark. I mean,
a lot dark,
where she talks about how she killed their kid. And man, what about this scene?
It was a well executed scene,
mm-hmm.
and kudos to the talent of those two actors that made it not as ridiculous as it should have been.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not entirely... Ynir talks about the power of the name, Lyssa.
Yes.
But they don't really explore it all that much. I mean, and the movie was 2 hours... Just
2 hours long, yeah.
Just over 2 hours long. And it makes me wonder how much more there was to the story and the backstory, because they had this woman of ancient name, and then they have this whole thing with Ynir and Lyssa, the woman of the web, and you feel like you missed a whole bunch.
Yeah, well, because Lyssa is also the name of the princess.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so is the name Lyssa, is it handed down from generation to generation? And is there some curse that goes along with it? Or are they just, are they trying to imply that Ymir is ancient?
I wasn't quite sure. Glenn, what do you think? Because they did do this.
I think the implication is that Ymir is much older than he appears to be.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that would make sense, but yeah, I was really curious about that, wondering if what they meant by ancient, and if, I mean, because the only reason he dies is because he took the sands of her life.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, because she handed them willingly over to him.
Mm-hmm.
And so then it came to him. So it makes you wonder how long she was in that web, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, she was looking pretty old until she turned young because she wanted to look as how he sees her. Mm-hmm. Which, there's that love theme, Glenn.
Yeah, it is.
But there it doesn't bother me.
Right. It made sense there. It
made perfect sense there.
Yeah. And those are two veteran actors who, you're right, Don, they ground that scene and make it a lot more meaningful than it probably should have been.
Had there been less talent, it would have been ridiculous.
Yeah.
But they made it work.
Yeah, they sold the heck out of it, especially, you know, how they're talking about how she killed her kid because she was so angry at him for leaving. She had to take her rage out of someone. Mm-hmm. Which is interesting because this is kind of, you mentioned swashbuckling, because that was the idea I got with Cowlin, is that, oh, this is kind of a swashbuckling adventure of sorts, almost, at least his character. Mm-hmm. And then you get this heavy moment. I'm like, wow, it got dark quick when she mentioned she killed her kid. I'm like, okay, we aren't just having a fun fantasy film anymore. It's taken a dark turn. And it does that a couple other times too, I think. But definitely in this scene. But it's still awesome. We've got the glass spider, which I noticed had the in its tail was just like the hourglass like she had.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, I thought was really cool. Glenn, what'd you think about the spider?
It was cool.
How do you think it looked? I mean, for special effects wise, I mean,
1983.
Mm-hmm.
I think it looked fine. It looked actually looked really good for. I mean, seeing as this is one of the most expensive movies ever made at the time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, you get that impression that they really were investing in hoping that this was going to be almost a series, don't you think, Glenn? Like this was going to be. The way they set this up, oh, kind of like
fantasy Star Wars.
Yeah. And
yeah. Or going with the Errol Flynn, Douglas Fairbanks theme, maybe mm-hmm. the next Sinbad.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you make a good point. This is like a sci-fi fantasy Sinbad. Holy shit, Don. You just triggered my mind, and I just realized that's what they're going for in this almost. You got your stop motion creatures, you got your swashbuckling lead, you got your merry band of misfits, including. Wow, okay, this movie borrows from a lot, folks, because I'm just sitting here thinking about it, and we're borrowing from Robin Hood. We're borrowing from so many things, but yeah, you're right. This could be a sci-fi Sinbad, or at least they were intending to be. I think they took up like all the studio stages at in Britain for this film, which you would think for a film like this and how it was received, you would have thought maybe they would have done a better job with marketing. I don't know, you know, why this film just didn't quite hit the mark. Maybe it was too late. I'm not sure. But yeah, the budget for this is huge. I mean, that makeup on the Cyclops alone was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the makeup effects on the widow was awesome. I mean, yeah, you could tell they were investing for something more. And unfortunately, it didn't do well.
Yeah. The sets were amazing.
They were very detailed. The sets were, I mean, the swamp was pretty extensive. You had can we talk about the Dark Fortress? There's so many things I do want to talk about, but can we talk about the Dark Fortress? Glenn, can you make heads or tails of the Dark Fortress of what they were trying to go for besides, I don't know, drug trip, maybe? Glenn? What did you think of this layout of the Dark Fortress?
Well, it's you know, it's chaotic. I think that's the point of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's meant to be this, you know, because it's the antithesis of light is the dark, you know, and the antithesis of love is hate, and the dark and hate is kind of, you know, it's not pretty, it's not, you know, it's not orderly. It's this kind of mishmash of just whatever, and it's never quite what it seems, but it's also, I don't know, it's just the best way to say it. I don't know. It's just, I mean, I loved the Dark Fortress. I thought it was great. I like the fact that, you know, the inside is this kind of changing thing, and you know, it's all smoke and mirrors. It's all lies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the fact you have walls that aren't walls, and you know, people can just fall through them and whatever. I mean, I think that's fantastic.
Dawn, what about you and the layout of the Dark Fortress?
It kind of, there were bits of it that made me think M.C. Escher, but like a dark and broken M.C. Escher. You know, like the eye.
Yeah, the eye prison.
Yeah.
That was crazy. I'm like, what? I mean, when I was a kid, I couldn't make any sense of the inside of the Dark Fortress at all. I didn't quite get it. And now watching it, now that you mentioned it, yeah, Escher I could see. Because then you have what she goes to down another hallway and it's like his claw, but it's not. So you have, and the fingers actually like move. And then she goes to another part to where it's finally a normal, like, dome is where he ends up leading her, and that's where she stays for the most part. And, yeah, Lissa, unfortunately here, it's 1983. It's a fantasy film. And Dawn, she's just the damsel in distress, isn't she?
Ish. She definitely was not, I mean, she was a prisoner, but I think it wasn't so much, I'm very torn on this one because there's a lot of things I didn't like about how they handled the character and the Lisette Anthony. I enjoy her as an actress. It kind of disappoints me, but it's also very exciting that they had to dub her voice over with Lindsay Krause's. Am I saying that name right?
Yeah, I think
getting
so.
The name right?
Yeah.
It makes me sad that they decided that a unknown British actress would do worse in theaters than an unknown American actress.
Right.
Guess what, folks? Neither one worked.
Yeah.
Maybe they should have stuck with just Lisette Anthony. Anyhow, she wasn't a weak character, not really.
Mm-hmm.
I think they were, I hope this was their intention, they were trying to imply that her value was her brains and her courage and not her physical strength.
Right. It did seem like they played a little bit like she was, you know, we don't get too much scenes because it's 2 hours and it feels like they could have made this a mini series almost, because there seemed to be a little bit of wordplay, or they're attempting to, between her and the Beast as far as justifying love versus, you know, practicality of them getting together. And there's just little hints of those discussions. And also, even earlier on, when we were first introduced to them, did you get the impression that Cowlin and Alyssa already kind of had a thing going? And they kind of talked their dads into trying to marry them, you know, under the guise of, oh, if we band together, we can fight the Slayers more? Or was it just love at first sight type of thing? Either one. Because I'm trying to figure that out.
Well, they were obviously in communication somehow, but they hadn't met face to face until that moment.
Okay.
So, yeah, they were already kind of connected by the, by that.
Mm-hmm.
They were already connected because of the mutual intelligence and that, and, you know, God forbid that a movie has ugly people fall in love.
Well, they're prince and princess, so we've already established, you know, what they, there's this standard of what they have to look like in Hollywood. So
exactly,
and that's what we have here. But yeah, you know, but I the reason I brought it up was just because I felt maybe that goes along the line of what you were talking about, of hoping that she was written as in being a little bit, you know, her strength was her brains, her philosophy in that, more so than any physical strength.
Yeah. It is implied that they were in communication and planning this marriage together on their own against their parents' wishes, even though they hadn't met face to face.
Right.
So they must have had some sort of pen pal, internet romance.
Internet. Inner crystal romance or something. I don't know. Glenn, how about you with Alyssa? Do you think that maybe that's what they were, hopefully they were going for? Maybe is that her strength was in her courage and her mind more so than, you know, actual physical strength?
She was not Red Sonja, that's for sure.
No.
She was what?
She was not Red Sonja, that's for sure.
Oh, no, not at all. Yeah, I mean, I think they did fine with her. I mean, you don't get a lot of time with her with the length of the movie. I don't know what, you know, puppet beast dude wanted with her in the first place. I'm like, dude, you're like 40 feet tall. There's got to be something. It can't be a physical connection. I mean, I don't know, maybe King Kong-ish is what they were going for, you know, a hairless King Kong.
Great. I just pictured a hairless King Kong. Thanks, Glenn.
Well, that's pretty much what the Beast is.
Yeah.
Actually, if one of the Ghoulies had a baby with King Kong, that's what you got, was him. And she wasn't just the sit around and pine for her prince. Mm-hmm. I don't think you get enough of her to really get a great look at her character.
Right.
But it's not like she was not your typical damsel in distress.
Yeah, she wasn't just sitting there crying.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was constantly trying to find a way out, and then she was had no problems talking to the Beast directly, like, you're full of shit, basically. You know, and to be fair, even though he was 40 feet hairless Beast guy, he could turn into evil Red Eye Cowan.
So yes, he could.
He could shapeshift.
Yeah.
So, you know, there is that, so... But yeah, well, that was kind of weird of why he captured her, because I'm like, okay, so you have this guy who's an interstellar traveler who conquers worlds, has a fortress that switches, you know, every day, has this badass forest that he called Slayers, who are pretty evil looking, you know, and kind of high tech. He's got that, and yet he believes in a prophecy to where a woman of ancient name and will marry the man of her choice, and then their kid will rule the galaxy. So maybe he was thinking there was truth in the prophecy, even though he was an interstellar traveler. I couldn't quite ever get that angle. Well, I
mean, truth in the prophecy. I mean, he's not just some interstellar traveler. I mean, there's obviously a degree of magic. I mean, he gave the knowledge of foresight to the Cyclops.
That's true. You're right.
So, yeah. I mean, him believing in prophecy, I don't think is an issue. Mm-hmm. And it also, I think it kind of reinforces what you just said, kind of reinforces the fact that he wasn't interested in her just because of how she looked.
Yeah.
Because if it was just how she looked, I mean, the dude's got changelings. He can have anyone look like her.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, his approach was then because he did believe in this prophecy and she was the one. Hey, you and I, we're going to have a kid that's going to rule the world, the galaxy. And it's like, she's like, nope, no, we aren't. He's like, yeah, we are.
And maybe that's part of why he was going from world to world and destroying them, is because he was looking for the woman of ancient name on different worlds.
Ooh, so the legend is not just on this planet, you're saying, maybe.
It would make sense.
Yeah, that would absolutely make sense. Because I mean, if it was just this planet, then here's the thing, I'll just not go there.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, that makes a lot of sense. Look at this. We're already writing the sequel to Krull.
Well, but you know, it's been a while. It's ripe for a remake.
It, at least a remake or a sequel of some sort. But yeah, it's you're right. The legend maybe because they're people, even though they're sword and sorcery, they're aware of other planets, other creatures from other planets. They don't necessarily have aliens. They don't have interstellar travel themselves, yet they are very aware of other things in the world. So who's not to say this legend doesn't just hold true to Krull, but across the galaxy? Then that would definitely make sense of why he lands from planet to planet. That totally makes sense, Don. I think you really just closed up that hole.
And honestly, just because they don't address interstellar travel doesn't mean they don't have it. It just means they're not using that. That doesn't serve a purpose for this particular story on this particular world.
So you're saying maybe there were spaceships.
Anything's possible.
Or we're dealing with magic in the world. As you mentioned, Glenn, the Beast does use magic. So maybe they travel interstellar planets with magic.
Could be.
That possible? That would be possible, I guess. Anything is, really, at this point, when you have a big 40...
Or it could be that maybe one time they did travel by space, and they were like a colony ship that came here.
Oh.
Could very well be.
They lived for, a couple hundred years, and this is where they are now.
Right. That would explain some of the stuff they have, and the glaive. The glaive is an advanced weapon, folks, and we get to it now. And why we're getting to it now is because, just like in the movie, he doesn't use the glaive for most of the film.
That's true.
Yeah,
we get this badass weapon, Glenn, but we don't see it till the end. What's up with that, man?
You don't just bust it out for just the regular schmoes.
No. You just leave that. You do with your swords, right? But
no, you let your little ragtag army of former criminals just soak up the damage.
Mm-hmm. And then you pull.
He's a prince. Princes have meat shields.
That's true. They have meat shields. And he does have a lot of them, because they start out with a good chunk, and there's like, what, four at the end of this film?
Yeah, no kidding.
There's a huge body count in this one. But you're right. He does have meat shields, but he pulls out the glaive, and not only does it look badass, but Glenn, what do you think about the glaive? I mean, here they built it up pretty good, and do you think it got a chance to shine in this film, or would you have liked to see a little bit more of the glaive action?
It barely does shit in the film. I mean, it's like, okay, so it's a high-tech nanobot excavator, because mostly what it does is knock down some rocks.
Yeah. and cuts a hole in the dome.
He
put a hole for the door. Yeah. And it does take on the beast. I mean, he uses it to not quite slay the beast. Don, what'd you think of the glaive? Did you think it got a chance at all to shine, or the fact that it's so prominent on the posters and everything? Do you think its appearance was lacking?
It looks super cool, and it really was a disappointing weapon.
But it cut
the magical saw.
Magical saw,
which the magical circular saw.
Was it, Glenn?
Yeah, come on, seriously. Two hits to the bad guy and it gets stuck forever.
Yeah, what's that?
That.
Yeah, I couldn't get quite that. And well, what's funny too is, like, I don't know. For me, I would be like, if I was the hero, I'd say, as cool as the glaive was, it's in the bad guy, and the bad guy hasn't moved. I think I'll just leave it.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm going to go up to it and grab it.
Well, and there's definitely right there. There's definitely aspects of Star Wars with the whole, you know, he can summon it to his hand.
Yes. So I'm like, yeah. Well, because it's connected to him, he is the one, because he controlled it while he cut through the dome, which he couldn't cut a square door at all. Though it would have been possible, it had to be jagged, and then he can control it by mental power to take on the beast and summon it. Yeah, there's so much the Force. That's so much that reminded me of the Force. I'm like, okay, so you're borrowing from this now. Okay, that's fine. With the glaive, but yeah, it was disappointing. You don't get to see more of the glaive. So people out there might be asking, well, how does he vanquish the bad guy? Glenn, it's your favorite part. How does he vanquish our biggest, baddest interstellar beast guy with the Slayer army?
Well, everyone knows that when you get married, which was the one thing I missed since my divorce, is that when you're married to someone, you both get flamethrower hands. And I missed that a lot. Would have been helpful with all the snow I had if we could just run out and just flamethrow the driveway with our hands.
I totally got married in the wrong religion.
Yeah, well, yeah. It's got to be, it's Missouri Synod Lutheran Church. It's the only they defeat him by, they didn't get to complete their whole fire thing. So they do that and then, like, use the love of their fire to, like, incinerate him. Like this little candle flame that they cupped, you know, in this cute little like mystical ceremony, all of a sudden becomes like this, you know, napalm. You know, it's just yeah,
because their wedding ceremony, folks, when that got interrupted, they do this thing where he douses flame in the water, and then she grabs the flame out of the water and is supposed to hand it to him, but she never gets that chance. And yeah, you're right. The love conquers all theme in here is definitely strong in this final battle with the beast. Don, what did you think about this whole sequence?
It happened. Whether we wanted it to or not, it happened.
Yeah, was it disappointing? Because you'd think the glaive would be the thing that you just carve him up and you know. Yeah, well, it's the glaive, but
and because there was such a big production made out of it throughout the whole movie, this is the weapon of kings. You'll know when to use it. You use it only at the right moment. You'll know when to use it, and then it's so disappointing. It's so anticlimactic, and then there's this fire, which, you know, the foreshadowing of that was, you knew it was going to come back.
Oh yeah, you knew it. Just the way they said their lines in the ceremony, you're like, what's that? That's foreshadowing.
That's foreshadowing, son.
Now that reminds me of a shtick they did in Return to Class of Nukem High. Return to Class of Nukem High, aka Volume 2. They actually had that to where they have a scene where the girl is sitting in the bedroom. She's having this discussion with her mom, and it's obviously, you know, one of those foreshadowing conversations. And on the back wall is this big, like, shadow with a 4 in it.
Oh, God.
And they look over to it, and they go, what's that? And it's like, oh, that's foreshadowing, dear.
Yep.
I can't help but think of that every time I see that in a film. And, yeah, you get the foreshadowing here, but makes you wonder, though. I'm like, so what? Only the guy gets flamethrower hands? I mean, she had the flame the whole time.
That's what you call stroking the frail male ego.
Well, that too. I was going to say she had the flame, and he was like he's the kerosene. You know, he's.
Oh.
Those men are highly flammable.
The Krull men are highly flammable.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it was impressive. Like he used that flame everywhere. He flamed the beast, and then when they find the wizard who helped save the little boy who was originally with the Emerald Wizard, but now he's with them, they save him, and he uses the flame to blow a hole into the spaceship, and then they crawl down just as the spaceship explodes. They blow it up, literally. The Dark Fortress blows up.
Yeah.
What was up with that? I mean, I guess, you know, it's better than exploding all over the people, but Don, what'd you think about the Dark Fortress blowing up? Quirky, odd.
It was an unusual choice. I didn't mind the choice. I mean, again, magic.
Mm-hmm.
Although spaceship and gravity. But if they were trying to imply that by defeating the beast and the only thing holding the spaceship together was the beast,
mm-hmm.
again, magic. So it was an interesting concept that way.
Right.
I figured it made about as much sense as everything else, and I went with it.
Well, and the thing is, would you say, though, it was fitting within the context of the film world that they have in Krull?
Yes.
I mean, it's odd to us watching it, but it actually kind of makes sense in their world. I mean, you buy it, you're like, okay, all right, fine, it blows up. You know what? It goes, all the pieces go straight up into space. Which, you know, with the way the hallways were, made me wonder if the beast wasn't, if and the ship were together, like linked some way, not just, you know, like mentally, but physically, because of the way the hallways and were shaped as well, were almost organic.
Well, and when you saw the beast suit, you only saw its upper half, its head and its shoulders and arms.
That's true.
You never really saw the beast, or at the projection of him as Colwyn, you mm-hmm. never really saw the beast in its entirety. So, again, it's possible that they were, especially with that one scene with her running down what could be the beast's hand, that the entire ship was its body.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's almost the impression I got. How about you, Glenn? Do you think, when you think of the ship blowing up and, did that fit within the context of the film?
I think the ship was an extension of the beast himself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of the whole blowing up is that he's not, I don't know he's not natural, but he's not part of that world.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like the world's like, all right, you know, it's like, we're done with you. Get the hell out of here. Back to whence you come. Whatever.
I think those are two different things, Glenn, but no.
Not when you're a beast.
I like that. I like that idea that the world itself, the world of Krull itself, was rejecting the beast by throwing it off of itself. I like that idea. I like that concept.
That's a cool concept. And it would definitely be fitting within this story, in the context of this world that they did create. You mm-hmm. could see it that way. Which I like, which, man, I want to see more Krull. This was an interesting world that they painted. It's a shame this film didn't take off, because I think that's part of the appeal for me, and is the fact of this world that they created was so actually fascinating. Never mind the story, the main story that we have here is kind of basic, but the world it takes place in is just really cool and lots of possibilities, but we never got to see any more of it than that, unfortunately. Oh well, I guess I'm waiting for the remake. I'm surprised no one tried to tackle this one yet.
Liam Neeson in Krull 2.
Oh, Robbie Coltrane. Oh yeah, Robbie Coltrane. I have too
a certain set of skills that make me a nightmare for beasts like you.
Although
I will flamethrower you.
Apparently, Liam Neeson's latest film, the where he's the snowplow guy, is supposed to be a complete poke fun at his other movies.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
That's what I've heard. Yeah,
which makes me feel a lot better about that movie when I first saw the trailer. I'm like, eh. And then I saw some of the buzz going around, going, no, folks, this is fun. This is him making fun of his other movies. I'm like, oh, well, now he needs a Krull reference in there of his character with the many wives. So, Dawn, is there anything about Krull you maybe want to talk about we didn't touch on?
How about that animatronic suit?
Ooh, yeah. Of the beast?
Of the beast. Visually, it was really good. Movement-wise, mm-hmm. I think it was a huge mistake. A waste of budget.
Mm-hmm. Well, apparently, it was all self-contained. They mm-hmm. said the guts and everything about it was actually built in, so there were no wires sticking out at all out of the back of it or whatever, which is good and bad.
They didn't really use it. Like I said, you only see it from a distance. Except you see the head and the arms, and it's all blurry and or cloudy, and the movement is so stiff and artificial. Like, there's that one scene where he's responding and he just throws his arms up.
Yeah.
It's like, that's not very sinister nor very imposing. That budget probably could have gone elsewhere.
Oh my God, he's a space toddler.
What did you think about the animatronic suit of the beast?
Gosh, that was... For everything else, I think they did right. The everything with the beast, that when you actually see him, it's awful.
It's not good.
It's not good.
It's like the weakest part. It's like almost like they ran out of money at the end of this film. They're like, okay, so what do we do from here? Well, we got to finish up the movie somehow. We're already at 2 hours. Yeah, all right.
Hey, there's Bob, the beast. It's kind of ugly. What if we just cover him in bacon grease and put some Vaseline on the lens? That'll work, right? Sure, why not?
There you go. Man, I'd feel a bit upset if I was the special effects guys, though. Only because they put so much work into it and trying to make it so you don't have any cables sticking out. And half the time you see the beast, it's all through a Vaseline lens or some abstract cutting.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow, that's got to blow.
I mean, and what makes it even more disappointing is... The suits and the puppets and whatever they had for the Slayers and the Changelings, those were awesome.
Oh yeah, when they kill the only way you could kill the Slayers is you had to crack their head open, and every time they landed, the worm thing would crawl out of the body and go into the ground. That was so cool. And then we get to the Beast, and you're just like, oh yeah, look at that. I think the Slayers are cooler. Yeah, I'd have to agree. But yeah, that animatronic suit unfortunately just did not work. They should have just put a guy in a suit at that point. I think it would have worked better in some way, and then do forced perspective or projection screen or whatever, green screen, whatever you have not, would have been almost better than the animatronic suit. I mean, it's awesome that they did it self-contained, but at the same time, it just did not work.
It was a great concept, but it was
just not right. Yeah, fortunately most of the other film looked better than that creature, and they build up to the big beast boss, and then you got that. It's like, wow man, that's you dropped the ball right at the end, damn it, just at the 1 yard line. Glenn, how about you? Is there something about Krull we may not have touched on you wanted to talk about or bring up?
I don't think so.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you know what? Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, we got to mention James Horner. The music in this.
Oh, yeah.
I love James Horner, and I loved the score for this. The score for this film, I mean, it just builds that epicness, but it's also got a lot of familiar James Horner sound cues in here. He reuses a lot of stuff from the score later on. Glenn, what'd you think of the music with this?
It's very 80s.
It is very 80s. Mm-hmm. Don, how about you with the score?
Oh, same.
Yeah.
Very, very, very 80s. Very. You know what kind of movie you're watching.
You do. But we're talking early 80s here. And so they're doing the big epic music, because this is a big epic, as we've mentioned, very expensive film. And Horner is really trying to play up to it. And if you listen to soundtracks at all, ladies and gentlemen, because I love my soundtracks, many composers reuse their stuff. Horner was a huge recycler of sound cues. If you listen to Krull, you will pick out sound bits and tracks that he has used later on in like Star Trek 2, and like just shows up everywhere in his later scores. But it's still a fun score. It is totally, completely 80s instrumentation, but it is the London Symphony Orchestra that they got to do the score for this, which is really cool, and it just adds to the whole other element of Krull, which unfortunately is something that could have been epic but failed miserably at the box office, probably because it was just a little bit too late to the party, and they made some poor decisions. So I think we'll wrap it up to the night. So give your final thoughts. We know it got the riff tracks treatment, and people are like, oh, and including some of our own crew members who think this movie really is horrible. Don, what's your final thought with Krull, and would you recommend it?
Oh, I love this movie. I think it's fantastic. I think everybody should watch it if they're a fan of sci-fi or fantasy. And here's something I'm going to admit to that I really wasn't going to admit to. When I was very, very young and first exploring what would go on to be my English major in college, this actually was the inspiration for my first piece of fan fiction. And shush, I don't want to hear about it.
No kidding. Wow. You heard it here in the spoiler room, folks. Don's got some Krull fan fiction out there. So you need to post that online. There you go.
No, I really don't.
It's not good. Yeah, I know. I know. I've seen my writing.
Magnificent.
What? Ergo can shapeshift. Oh, yeah.
Tall and stature, wide and girth. Wait, no.
Oh, God. See, if Krull came out now, there'd be a porn parody of it. So,
or at least a dirty limerick.
Or a dirty limerick, at least. Glenn, final thought with Krull, would you recommend it?
Oh, I absolutely recommend Krull. It is, I mean, it feels a little dated, but it is, I think, one of the classics of that whole 80s kind of fantasy wave that we had, you know, where you had Sword and the Sorcerer and you had Conan and all of the other unmentionable ones that I won't mention because they're, there was some really bad stuff that came out back then. But, and there's, and surprisingly, there's a ton of really bad stuff out now, too.
Yeah.
If Amazon hasn't purged it all, there was a ton of great stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's just, it's one of those classic fantasy films. I think if you are a fantasy fan at all, and I think you should watch it and just know that the ending is terrible. So, accept that.
There's a lot of good in this film, more good than bad in Krull. Especially, yeah, I agree. If you're a fantasy fan at all, or like kind of that sci-fi fantasy amalgamation type of story, you should seek out Krull. There are many things in here, if anything, that will spark your imagination for some great fan fiction. but beyond that, even though it falters at the end, the world that this story takes place in is awesome. And you can see why it spawned like a number of video games as well as comics. I believe there was some comics as well that spun off of Krull and how it inspired a number of people. And no, it's not fantastic cinema, but it's good sci-fi fantasy, especially for the the early 80s. You know, you got to appreciate the scope that they were trying to go for with this film. And it is swashbuckling, which makes sense because the writer of this would go on to write Ice Pirates, which is the last film that writer wrote for, I'm thinking, obvious reasons. But
I don't understand why. It's a fantastic movie.
Ice Pirates is yes. Wonderful. Yes, it is. It's a lot of fun. So, so there's some more swashbuckling there. So it's understandable why our main character here is a swashbuckler. So yes, I recommend it as well. Seek it out. Lots of cool stuff. And of course, even though you don't get to see it much, the glaive is pretty cool weapon. Even though its performance isn't great, it looks badass. So there's at least that. So there you have it, folks. I hope you enjoyed our conversation on Krull. A little rambling tonight. I apologize for my ramblings, but thank you for my crew here for showing up and talking about this sci-fi classic from the early 80s. And now this is their time to license to shill, where you can find out where you can find their stuff at. So, Dawn, go ahead.
Sometimes you can find me at intheaudience.net.
Fantastic. And Glenn?
You know, I have been doing a lot of other stuff as far as my other projects go. I haven't done much for videos, but for the most part, if you want to find me at all, you can find me on Twitter with @guyinabunker.
Awesome. Fantastic. Well, I thank you, folks, and I hope you enjoyed our discussion this evening about Krull. And now, just say goodnight, everyone.
Good night, everyone.
I have the soundtrack to this.
I'm not surprised.
Good night, folks.
Good night.
Good night.
Hey, all my friends out there looking for more Spoiler Room goodness, then why don't you check out our brand new Patreon page, patreon.com/specialmarkproductions, where you can get access to exclusive Spoiler Room episodes and a whole lot more. You can also find us on Facebook groups at SMPRD and on the Twitter at Special Mark Pro. Let your voice be heard and let us know what you would like to see in the Spoiler Room, as well as just how we're doing in general. We appreciate your support, and remember, in the Spoiler Room, the conversation is fresh, but we do spoil the movies.